That's the same kind we use for our news department.
This is an interview with Mr. Bernard T. for 55 East Jefferson, 1974, at 2 p.m. Mr. Wilson, what do you remember?
Ohio and Chillicothe. Well, in the Logan Elm, which probably many, many people have heard about, but it's only about 13, 14 miles from there.
Okay, what did your father do in Circle Mill?
He worked for the electrical, he was a stationary steam and electrical engineer for the municipal power plant.
And your mother?
Well, of course, she was a housewife, but before that, she worked making manufacturing cigars. From the I didn't know that you had to have a license to operate a transmitter. So I was on the air with it, and one day one of the men from the United States Navy Department in Ashtabula, Ohio, came down and saw the big flat-top antenna I had up and wanted to see it. I took him up and showed him. It was up in the attic of our home on Carroll and Oak Hill. And after he operated the set, contacted the Ashtabula Coast Guard station. He pulled out a metal seal and sealed my equipment off so I couldn't use it anymore.
Okay. Did you experience any
directly from the town in Circleville, Ohio, where we lived in 1918, the majority of the people there were of German extraction. They had moved up into that area when they first came to this country as farmers, because it was a very fertile region. It's the, Pickaway County is very, very excellent farming area. So on the streets of the city, you'd hear more German spoken than you did English before the war. And came the war.
When the depression.
Well, let's see. At that time, I already had my commercial license. I was working I had applied for a job at several different broadcast stations, but it had no answers. And I was working for McElroy Furniture Company as a radio repairman and installer and salesman. So they started to cut us back to two or three days a week, and about that time, the same time that I got that notice, I also received a notice to come to work in Columbus, Ohio at a broadcast station.
What other types of jobs did you have before you worked at KBN?
Well, out of high school, I was too young to get a job. I couldn't even get a working permit. I was only 17 when I graduated. So finally, I was able to get a job working at Ward Baking Company. Worked there for about three, 4 months and lost about 20 pounds that I couldn't afford to lose. I wasn't that heavy. I think I weighed about 135 when I got out of high school. Spring, I was old enough to get a working permit in February, and about March I got a working permit and got a job in a steel mill working as a craneman and lineman, electrical lineman. Out of Columbus, I worked there for about 5 months, and then a friend of mine that I knew from amateur radio was chief engineer of this station, WFJC in Akron, Ohio, which was owned by the William F. Jones Company, an automobile dealer of all things. And he invited me to come to work up there, so I did, worked there for about 5 months. And while I was there, Mr. Williamson heard of me and knew me, I guess, from various amateur operations. And so he called me and asked me if I would come to work in Youngstown. So since it was my hometown, I was happy to come back.
What was KBN like when you first started to work for them?
Well, the equipment was all homemade. Back in those days, very, very few people had commercial-made equipment. And we had one studio and a reception room. Two studios, a reception room and a transmitter room and a generator room on the third floor of the YMCA.
What was the stations than KBN at the time you worked for them?
In the country or?
Well, in the surrounding area that they had to compete with.
Yes, Cleveland and Pittsburgh.
Was there anything that you could do to compete with them? Did KBN?
At that time we were 500 watts and we ran on a schedule that we were on a couple of hours and off a couple of hours because we shared time with WOSU in Columbus, Ohio. And 500 watts was all the power that we figured that, well, I should say Mr. Williamson figured that we could afford. is still standing. It's put up, in fact, it was erected in 1937. And we moved out. Had no money with which to operate. It was strictly, before that, it was strictly a personal thing because there was very, very little advertising. The what there was generally on a weekend, and during the week there was some, but it was very moderate compared to what we have today. We think there was either one or two salesmen. There was two salesmen on the staff, really. And the wages took off.
You mentioned how you met Mr. Woodson. What was your first impression? This proved to be accurate, your first impression of him?
Yes. Housekeeping shop out on the corner of Princeton and Market Street. And from that, I figured that he compared favorably with the previous men that I had worked for, the owners of these other stations. In fact, I felt he was a little better because he was also an amateur and he knew radio business pretty well.
What led up to Bell Labs?
Well, during the war, I had a commission in the Naval Reserve for many years, and due to a football injury sustained in high school, they finally gave me a medical discharge, but then after a year of the war, we were into it maybe a little over a year, they come back and wanted me to go back in and sign a waiver on the medical discharge. And they needed officers pretty badly in my category in the radio and communication field. So they at that time, the Western Electric Company, who actually hired me, had a man in the field, and he came to see me and told me what the program was. And my employer, Mr. Williamson, told him that if he would be happy to loan them to me, me to them. I was to go to Italy and help set up a 50 kilowatt transmitting station after the invasion of Italy by our forces. And it so happened, after I was into the program, I discovered that there were two very good friends of mine sitting in Europe just waiting for the same job to put such a transmitter into operation. And I felt that I would be just wasting my time and asked them to either put me in the radar or send me back home. So they put me over into the radar division, and I worked there from then on.
Was the station eventually set up that they in first?
No, they never.
You?
They never set it up.
Never did.
No, they found out.
the years, KBN?
Well, I think there were somewhere around 200 different types of radio tubes when I first started in the business. And it fast increased to many thousands. And it got all the state circuitry started to enter in more and more, particularly in the audio section. And eventually all of the audio became solid state. And then a few years ago, they started in on the transmitters, and particularly FM and television transmitters. Even in the plain, ordinary AM broadcasting transmitters, they now are using quite a bit of it. And it's fast coming to the point, I should say, where you will have maybe all solid state except possibly the last stage in any transmitter.
Was TV a very
I saw it originally at NBC in New York City at their studios, but at that time there was two, that was RCA, and there was also a Fox. Back in at the end of the first war, or second war, in late 44 or early 45, as soon as you turn it, you're ready.
Yeah, it's on.
The picture was quite small, and you had to watch it in a very darkened room. The picture, I believe, at that time was about 8x8, and the they could get out of it in, say, transmitting it across. Sat on the shelf for many years. And of course, at that time, they were still using the spinning disc. They still had not come up with the Doctor's Workin's iconoscope, which actually radically changed television and the ability to transmit an image.
What effect do you think it had on radio once it became smoothed out?
Well, radio at that time had a very, very strong hold. And of course, anything new grasps the imagination, and the salesman always looking for something new to help them to sell. So it became a very major tool towards large advertisers switching over to television because they saw a chance to show.
How strict are the rules of censorship with regard to radio and TV?
Rule among their own members. So then the majority of the stations also try to maintain a some sense of censorship because
with having the FCC, are the rules of that more strict because you have two types of media with effect on the public?
No, as long as you're not the only station in the area, for instance in a community, there is no actual FCC impairment.
Could you shed some light on the events up to the merger between KBN and WMBW and eventually the one station, KBN?
Well, that two musical interests back in the early days of the early history of radio in Youngstown. WAAY was owned by the Yarling Rainer Company and was broadcasting in the evenings, and in as much their own musical interest. And there was another musical house in Youngstown owned by Harry Warner, and he was unable to get any programming on Yarling Rainer Radio, WAAY, so he convinced a friend of his, Mr. Yaw, who owned the Yaw Battery Company, to install a radio station with Mr. Warner as the musical director for the station. And I believe he had some monetary interest in it at that time. The WMBW was put into being on Market Street, very close to what was then where the old Market Street School is. It was just north of that, in a building that is presently operated by or owned by the Steelworkers Group.
Any control over the station, or were there others involved?
Started it. They were in business partners in radio repair business, so they put the radio station on the air to give the people some programming and to prove that to prove their ability to repair radios. So the station was then owned by those two people for a couple of years, until one day they needed a couple of 50-watt tubes for their transmitter, And at that point,
Mr. Williamson eventually get control of the station by himself?
Well, back in 1930, Creed Corp Penning sold. Years later, Mr. Brock had moved down into Kentucky. So, Mr. Williamson and a man in Cleveland, the former mayor of Cleveland by the name of Towns, jointly purchased that stock. So now Mr. Williamson had was in partnership with a fellow by the name of Towns. And I believe that he also had one or two shares of stock were owned by a Mr. Jones, who was a certified public accountant.
Do you remember any?
I was sitting at the console. We were carrying a CBS program out of New York when suddenly the audio just went dead. So I immediately called our repeater station in Newcastle, and I couldn't get them. So I called Cuyahoga Falls. Up to a pole, and with an axe it cut through a 2,000 pair cable and then hooked this cable onto a winch or something and pulled it out. They had to winch it out because there was not a single truck. Probably somewhere around 2 miles of that cable was pulled through the supports, wound onto the truck, and the truck took off, and that was it.
How long did this last? Were you ever tempted to leave KBN and go to any other station, or did other people ever try to spirit you away from KBN?
Yes, several times. I could have gone to work for Westinghouse and a couple of others, but this was my home and my family ties were here, so I chose to stay.
This is what made you stay at KBN?
Right. Okay. In fact, I like... that reason why I decided to stay with him. Radio, I believe, will remain in its present form. You may find a reduced number of stations eventually. I don't think that the commercially the smaller station can manage to survive, because it requires a certain amount of money to update the station. The station must be updated at least once every 20 years, if not earlier. Depends upon the maintenance program at the station, whether it should be every 20 years or every 10 years. If the maintenance program is poor, then it'll have to be every 10.
And KBN never had any trouble with renewing their license at all over the years?
Well,